I think you summed it all up perfectly with, you said, the learning English without learning English. That to me is the holy grail. That's perfectly summarized. Yeah. Hi, Fides.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. And well, welcome to the podcast, first of all. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Likewise. My pleasure as well.
And yes, to get things started, why don't you tell us about your first experiences with languages? Like, what were the languages that you first got in contact with? Like, was it English in school, or how was it? And you know, what was that experience like?
Well, I'm from the Philippines. I was born there, so growing up, I spoke two languages, so English and Tagalog. I'm also from Manila, so that's the language we speak, Tagalog. But again, with English, I've always been speaking in English back home. So learning it, I can't remember how I learned it. That's the thing. So, but in school, yeah, we have English and the official term for Tagalog is Filipino. When you learn it in school, they call it Filipino subject. So, yeah, so I speak both. And also, my family moved to Canada, and we lived in Ottawa, and Ottawa is the capital city of Canada. So, and there it's bilingual, you know, a lot of Anglophones, but you know, when you look at when you walk on the street, you know, you see French language everywhere. So, and I've taken some courses. No, back when I was in high school, French courses, and I'm also married to a French guy. So, so that's kind of my third or second language, if we can call it that way. French is the one. Yeah. So there you go. And now I live in France. I live in France, so I live and breathe the language. You know, that's the language I speak here.
Nice.
And English, since I teach English. Yeah.
Well, that's a nice background.
But yeah, yeah.
I'm curious about the English part that you mentioned. So do your parents use English at home or?
Yes. And my grandma as well. Yeah. My grandma and my parents. Yeah.
Okay. But it's just.
And on TV, you know, I watched Sesame Street, just like any American, you know, when I was a kid. Right.
But is that common in the Philippines, like parents speaking English to the kids or?
My parents, they did. Yeah, it's very common. Yeah. Mm. I would say so, in my generation, at least.
Okay. Interesting. And yeah, I'm also curious about your first experience in Canada. Because you said that you took French in high school.
In high school, yeah.
Before going there. But I'm curious, did that knowledge translate right away? Or
No. It wasn't, learning the conjugations and all that. No, it didn't. So, yeah, it was just a beginner's level. So, je suis, tu es, you know, you recite the things and you conjugate the terminaison and all that. So, yeah, that's how I learned it. And then, yeah. But I wanted to be good in French, and I continued studying it. So yeah. But yeah, now it's my second language or third.
So, and was there anything specific that you did when you got to Ottawa that helped you with French? Because you said you took like a beginner's course in high school, and when you got there, you couldn't actually communicate in French, right?
No, and that's the thing. My mother-in-law, she only spoke French. Okay. She didn't speak English at all. So I was forced to speak French. And when I came here, I also took some courses with And there's something different about the Quebec French. A little bit. I didn't notice it back then, but there are some differences, especially at the pronunciation. Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
the Quebecois French, yeah. Right. And my teacher was a Quebecois.
Yeah, it's mostly pronunciation, that's it, right? Because when it comes to the word, the word. It's French, right? It's the
yeah, yeah, that's right.
The way they pronounce
grammar rules, yeah.
Cool. That's interesting. So now you're a high school teacher, you said, or
me? Yeah, I'm a high school teacher. Yeah, I teach English literature. Actually, quite a few things. Even history and geography, because I work in a bilingual school. So the format is that kids learn French in the morning and English in the afternoon. Well, I teach high school and actually elementary. So for high school, they learn English in the morning, and then in the afternoon would be the French stuff. Okay. So basically, I can teach anything except for French and math, because here the Education Nationale requires that they learn French and math in French. But I mean, we do have the subject matter experts. Like, say, for example, if physics and chemistry, I wouldn't teach that. I wouldn't dare, because even though I can, I'm allowed. I wouldn't, because we have people with background in physics and and all that who could teach that more.
The knowledge about the
subject. But history, I'm okay, and English literature and all that.
So I want to ask you about your classes, because we've talked before, and I know that we could have a little discussion here, like, no problem at all. But when it comes to, because that I believe in comprehensible input as the important thing in order to learn a language. And then what I want to talk about is, or my question is comprehensible input enough to actually acquire language? Because I think it is. I know you may have a bit of a different idea, but I want to hear your thoughts on the way language works, on how you teach your students.
Well, the thing is, first of all, it's different when it comes to Tagalog and English. Tagalog is a completely different beast, in English, since they are French, it's very similar in terms of subject, verb, object. So right away, they have some kind of foundation already. And a lot of times when I receive a student and they are a complete beginner, let's say I receive, let's say they're in about grade 11, okay, and they know nothing at all. I find that it's natural for them to align the grammar, and they know their language. So why not, use what they already know? So if they know that in English we have something called subject verb agreement, then and they know that they have that in French, then they can use those notions when they are learning the language. And the thing is, the problem with that, when you're teaching a class, you need to be able to differentiate. So you have students who are already advanced, some are beginners. I do give them extra English, for example. And it's interesting, because we call that program Extra English. And there happened to be a video online on YouTube called Extra. It's kind of a sitcom. It's a good comprehensible input. I give those to my students. Okay, so listen to this one, just watch it. And it's slow paced, right? And I monitor them. Okay, how many videos, how many episodes did you watch this week and all that? And, talking to them slowly so that, in the same thing, when I'm talking slowly, it's, in a sense, comprehensible input, because I don't get fast. So I do believe in comprehensible input, because again, it's just like the Albuquerque example. You tell me something about Albuquerque, if you don't know anything about it, you can't say anything. So vocabulary is important, all those notion and all that. You need to hear it first for it to be there.
Exactly.
Yeah. But again, comprehensible input for me is just one. I work on three principles: comprehensible input, spaced repetition, and a varied review. I always check those three. And I know you're familiar, I'm sure, with all the other two. So spaced repetition is, you know, sometimes I would introduce a concept, I'll cover it again the next day, and maybe I'll wait another week. Maybe, you know, I'll build up on it. But essentially, I'll bring up the same notion in 2 weeks, you know? Mm-hmm. So, because that way, it just solidifies it. And, you know, it serves as a confirmation. Oh, yeah, I already know that if you're a learner.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is the varied review, which is just different type of content, right? So, for example, if today we're having a lesson, you know, I'll teach the grammar points. And then, okay, and I'll give you a video as well to watch it, and maybe an article, you know what I mean? So that way, it's kind of like, you know, learning a recipe. You want to know how these, you know, the other chef does it and the other one. You know, it just becomes, it makes you an expert, you know what I mean? It adds to your confidence, in a sense.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and just getting exposed to different types of content, different types of topics, it's also going to be more interesting, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's not all about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, go ahead.
No, just a little question about the spaced repetition part. When you say that you talk about the topic like 2 weeks later, do you mean that you use it yourself as you're speaking, or you're trying for them to use it?
Both. For example, let's say complex sentences. Of course, we have to start with simple sentences. So in simple sentences, I'm, you know, at that point, I wouldn't introduce the complex sentences if they haven't understood the whole thing completely. So I'll just bring up some notions, you know, just, okay, yeah, you do remember that this is what we do when we, you know, when we construct a simple sentence. And then, you know, I just review, basically. It's kind of like a review when I say spaced repetition as well. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes it's the same same ideas. For example, when we're talking about literary devices, for example, foreshadowing. Okay, we will see foreshadowing again in this literature, and we know or we've seen that in the previous one. So tell me something about foreshadowing in this one. So they're not just a spaced repetition, but they're actually applying what they've learned. So in a sense, it's a combination of spaced repetition and also varied review, because it's the same idea but using a different type of material, you know.
And also, of course, the, like you said, the dynamic of teaching in the high school is different to teaching adults, for example. And we'll get to Tiger Lake in a moment, but because, like you said, you have different levels. It's not like, so I teach adults. I teach spies to adults.
Mm-hmm.
And when I have group classes, obviously they're little groups, not like yours in high school, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to put them into a group that all of them have similar levels. Because mm-hmm. it's easier for me and for them as well, right? Because you have to deal with that issue that you may have people who are advanced because, you know, they like language, they watch TV in English in their free time or for whatever the reason, while others are just getting started, right? So that adds to the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And then also within the, let's call it formal education system, you also need, what's the word? You need...
We have standardized.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not that you can do absolutely everything you want to do with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's a bit of a different scenario. So okay. I'm curious about your tagalog because obviously I'll leave all the links below to your YouTube channel and everything, but you have a YouTube channel called Learn Tagalog with Peter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do you only create the videos or do you teach tagalog as well?
I do. I have my own company, actually. It's called Tagalog International. So, we receive students from different levels. Usually after intermediate, they're they're on their own, but mostly beginner students. Yeah, that's what we have. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah, I teach beginners and up to, I would say, advanced.
Yeah. And is that online or?
It's online. Yeah.
Well, and we're adults and or.
Adults, children, and yeah.
Okay, so
anyway. All ages, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And is there anything you do differently? Or because I guess you have more freedom to do whatever you want to do in terms of you don't have those standardized tests that you talked about.
The basic idea is that I do, we do, and you do. Okay, so I will introduce a notion that's or a word, right? For example, pagkain, food, right? And then, okay, say pagkain. Let's say pagkain, right? That means food. And if I say pagkain ito, that means this is food. Ito means this, okay? And then, it follows the same notion used in spaced repetition, because if I have introduced the word ito before, which means this, I'll just be repeating it, right? Pagkain ito. It's like plug and play. So that means if I say kape ito, kape coffee, right? So it's the same thing. It repeats. So there are lots of spaced repetition in there. You won't even notice. But yeah, it's that's how I teach. And then again, I do. I introduce. We do. I get the student to repeat, just to make sure that the pronunciation is correct, and then I get them to, apply it. Okay. So let's say, you've learned food. You've learned water. Okay. So how do I say this? And lots of pictures. Lots of pictures. So again, comprehensible input. You have the information, the input, the as a word, you know, you have that. And usually I put it in red. So this is the word that we're learning. It's red. And then you have a picture of a water, yeah, a glass of water. And yeah, mm-hmm. You just pair it. And it sounds simple, but again, it they need to practice. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the part I want to get to, because obviously, again, it's Tagalog, so it's different than teaching English, because I guess your Tagalog students, most of them, they know nothing about the language beforehand, or they started with it a little bit, but it's so different to the native language that it's just different to teaching English, right? Because your English students, they're bringing contact with English somehow.
Yeah.
Some have been more in contact with it, others not so much, but even if you don't want to, you're going to get exposed to English, right? You're going to get in contact with the language. But so I see a lot of things that I really like that are interesting, that the thing that you're sharing, this is water, this is coffee. But I'm curious, so when you say this is coffee, what you said, do you, the first time, do you tell them what you just did, that this, I forgot the words. Like, this word means this. Or do you show it?
Yeah, it's a word. Yeah, so ito, it's written. Ito. Or sometimes it can be, if the student is too young and they cannot read yet, then just ito. Right. Ito. Yeah. Right. So, mm-hmm. Yes, your question?
Yeah, because I want to understand. Like, so you said ito, and you say coffee or water. But so if you write it down or you tell them, do you translate it? So do you tell them ito means this, or do you just show them?
So let's say kape, okay? And then you say, so kape ito. So it's something like that. If it's a kid, right? So, but if it's an adult, they'll get bored just me doing that, doing all the gestures, right? But if you're looking at it from the comprehensible input perspective, then you have the gestures, you have the props, you have the mm-hmm. voice. The word is actually just, it's something extra. It's like the fifth element or something like that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you have my voice, you have my feelings, you have the object, you have my gestures, you have, you know, my the sound. Yeah. So there's a lot coming in. Yeah.
Exactly. I like that. The reason why I'm asking is because I think, like, just showing it and using, like you said, gestures or objects to help them understand, to me, it's more natural, and mm-hmm. I think it's better for them to learn this that way, as opposed to, because sometimes we as teachers tend to use a translation right away, mm-hmm. like instead of you showing it and speaking Tagalog,
mm-hmm.
say that "ito" means this.
Mm-hmm.
My fear with that is they're going to be, you know, whenever they want to communicate or whenever they listen to the language, they're thinking about the word in English or French,
mm-hmm.
whatever the native language, as opposed to just the mental representation of
mm-hmm.
of the object or the phrase you're using.
Mm-hmm.
Why I wanted to ask, because I really like that you're just using the language that the target language, Tagalog in this case, and they understand what it means, because mm-hmm. you know, the object and your voice, like you said, everything. So I like that.
Yeah, and it's funny because with kids, they won't translate it. So for example, if I say tubig means water, tubig ito, this is water. So what the way they register tubig is actually not water in English. They'll say tubig. Oh, then look, that sounds like too big, and they will laugh.
That's what I thought.
Tubig. And so then that's how they remember the word. Not even, oh, that means water in English. No, not, it's not even that way. So, which is interesting, because they're not translating at that point. They're just using just their mental kind of tricks to remember the words. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's, I always talk about that. Like with like simple example, like the idea is not to, learn that too big, it means water in time, but that too big, when you hear that word, you picture water in your
head.
So that's the idea, and that.
And I think now you'll remember too big because it's too big. Yeah, and
but that,
just that, like the kids.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. Yeah,
yeah.
But like, it's too big. Okay.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Yeah.
I'm curious about the part about having them repeat what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because of pronunciation only, or do you hope that that's going to help them communicate earlier, or what's the...
It serves as practice and for me to know if there are mistakes in pronunciation or if they really just can utter the word. Yeah, it's just for knowledge check.
Okay.
So because later on, let's say they'll ask for water, they may not ask, oh, can I have water? They may not use the word water. So if you are a parent and you're trying to get your children to say water, rather than saying, oh, say water, you know, it can get very stressful. So you can just say, oh, you want water? Oh, gusto mo ng tubig, you know, yes. And sometimes it's nice if they would repeat it, but there's no need to force.
Okay.
It's nice. Naturally, they might actually say it, because that's how it happens in school where I work. It will become natural for them when you say something, they'll actually repeat it. Somehow they start to learn that that's the protocol, that if I say something, they will repeat. I don't need to tell them, say this, you know what I mean? So, and that's the thing. And they'll just repeat it. If they feel like you're repeating, they can repeat it. If not, then that's fine. What I need them to learn is that, okay, we say too big for water.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm asking because, I find that interesting. That it can help with pronunciation.
Mm-hmm.
But my fear sometimes is, like, if we want our students to repeat what we're saying, if we want them to just use the words and take their pronunciation, so that's fine. But sometimes my fear is that we want them to be able to communicate as soon as possible, we're kind of forcing the issue a little bit and forcing them to speak when they're not ready for it yet. And that's going to lead to frustration, right?
Yeah.
It's different to just repeat what you're saying or like even like just a single word than to force them to try to communicate and build something which they're clearly not ready for because they're beginners, right? That's my fear sometimes. So that's why I don't worry about their output. Like if your goal is, like you said, just for them to use the words and so they can get used to the pronunciation and things like that, I'm perfectly fine with that. But sometimes I've seen teachers that in a way they hope that that's going to help them sort of accelerate the process, if that makes sense, of communicating when it just takes a long time, right, to be able to communicate in a foreign language.
Yeah, the problem with kids is that they will always use the easiest way. So if you actually do not get them to practice, they might just not do it.
Right.
But what I can tell you is that they learn the protocol right away, and they know that when they're at school, the context is different. And I'm sure the parents they tell them as well. Okay, you're at school now. You speak English here because at home they speak French. So it's kind of like you're putting them in a different environment, because the way the strategy is at school is that they are supposed to learn, let's say, history, just the way we would teach history in Canada, for example. There should not be any difference. So that's the idea. That's kind of like the product of that school. So they know that from just by going there, okay, it's a different environment. So here I'm expected to speak in English. Now, but I understand what you're saying, that it might cause some frustration, and I am aware of that. So I make sure that we stay in the conversation, you know. So for example, and the funny part is there are some things that we just don't learn the way we should. I don't know if I can explain with an example. So for example, colors, right? So for example, if I say, I don't know, oh, this is blue. Like, see, for example, blue, what is blue? Blue, blue, you know, blue. Kids don't actually learn. How did you learn your colors? That's not how we learn our colors, for example. So why would I force them to learn colors that way? It would just frustrate them. So for example, but let's just say, okay, it's time to go home. Oh, where's your jacket? Okay. Oh, the blue jacket. Oh, here's your jacket. Oh, it's a nice jacket. It's blue. You know, naturally like that, not like you'd force them. Okay, what color is this? This and this and this, you know, that's just kind of like a dictator. No, I'm aware of the things that you're saying. That sometimes it's just not the way we learn things. And how important is it? How important is it that I can name all the colors, frankly? It's not important, right? So it's more important to say, oh, this is your jacket. Oh, okay, here you go. It's good to add a little bit of description. Okay, blue. But then other than that, there's really no use to memorizing all the colors, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's natural. It's meaning based. That's the main thing for me. Like it's meaning based, because you're talking to him or to her about their jacket because they're going home, and so it's not I love that. It's not like what color is this? It just sounds so artificial to me. But I really like that. Also, but again, back to what we said before, like when with the kids in your school. They have tests at the end of the year, or, you know, they have parents' expectations for them to be able to communicate again. So you have to deal with different issues, probably. I get adults, and they come to me because they want to. So, you know, when they have tests, they have their expectations, but I have more freedom when it comes to not being so pressed. Or start communicating early when they might not be ready for it, like we said. because that might lead to frustration. That might lead, because again, one of my biggest fears as a teacher or as a language student myself is that if you try to communicate too early, like not just single words like you said, which is perfectly fine, or kind of go to the toilet, things like that, right? That's fine. But if we try to communicate too early, I see that a lot of people get frustrated because, well, they're not ready for it yet, right? And whenever they want to say something, they need to think about it for a while. And they need to consciously recall things. And they have that sort of hesitant style with a lot of pauses, you know, like, and that leads to a lot of frustration. That's why I'm talking about this specific topic.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm also interested if you have an example of, well, first of all, when you were talking about your kids using English when they get to school.
Mm-hmm.
But how much do they communicate? Or is it just little things like, teacher, can I go to the toilet? Or teacher?
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's really the basic, because, I want this. Can I have?
Okay.
Yeah. And it's funny because at the end of the day, we measure their behavior if they've been good in class. And that's actually how they learn their color, you know. They can get green if they're good, you know, if they haven't been too noisy. And then they'll learn right away, oh, can I have green? Can I have green? See?
Okay.
Not without getting them to recite all the colors. They know that green is, they can get green at the end of the day because they've been good, right? So, yeah, it's just simple sentences like that.
Cool.
And then for the rest, it's just me speaking in English, and they'll just, you know, whatever they can
love that.
Yeah, you know, understand from what I say. Then
that's awesome. Yeah, I love that, because what a student needs at the end of the day, they need to listen to target language, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
In simple words, that's how you get the language in your brain.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, like what you said about Albuquerque. If you've never heard of Albuquerque, you can't say anything about it, right?
Yeah, yeah. And actually, with kids, they love songs. There's something about songs, you know. They can, like, for example, this my plan for our Christmas show is to get them to sing Give Love on Christmas Day, right? And that's a long song. And we're talking about kids who have not, you know, September, some of them, they have not, they're complete beginners, no English, zero, right? So, but I can just imagine them singing. And I am confident that we have 5 weeks to practice before our show, our Christmas show. And I'm confident that they will actually learn it. And how many stanzas are there? There's a natural thing about songs. So let's not forget that. So, songs are good, you know, and, you know, you learn syntax, you learn grammar, you learn, you know, there's something there. And I guess, especially, okay, I don't like saying this, but sometimes we do those kind of routine things like, this is an apple, you know, just an example, you know, but again, like, ta, 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 you know, so there's musicality in language. And then, yeah, it's not just words like ka, ga, ga. And even in Tagalog, you'll hear Tagalog is like that. Da, 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 da. Even in French, like, you can tell English, you can distinguish between, you know, the sounds. Like English, like wah, wah, wah. But French, like, you know, so you can hear there's something about it, right? So I incorporate that. I try to use that principle, you know, the musicality of words in my teaching.
Understand. Anyways, we all love music to some extent.
Yeah.
It's enjoyable, so that always helps.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that I always talk about, like with songs or stories or whatever it is. You're actually going to learn the grammar, syntax, like you said, naturally without you paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
But like, again, back to the example we talked about before, mm-hmm. the blue jacket. You're focusing on meaning.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And they're actually going to learn all the other stuff, the grammar, and without being aware of it, which is the ideal scenario for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And songs, I think, are a good example of that, because they just like the song, they're interested in it, And yeah, you like that?
Yeah, and context is important because, for example, when it's recess, we know in my class, okay, if they're the first one who gets ready, they'll say, "Oh, can I be a line leader?" Line leader, like who would use that word? Like, and who would use that term? You wouldn't give that to a beginner, right? Because it has no use. But line leader, there's the word line, there's the word leader, but it's just a vocabulary that we use when it's recess or when we're going to the library. Oh, can I be a line leader? Can I be a line leader? You know, but they just learn it naturally. Actually, I didn't have to repeat it many times. Maybe I repeated it once or twice. Okay, at the beginning of September, okay, I need a line leader. Okay, you're the line leader. Okay, you go in front, right? And right away, they'll understand the concept. And, oh, line leader. I want to be a line leader. So I need to learn that word so I can, next time, I can ask to be a line leader. And they learn it. And there's also this notion of the need. Okay, the need of using that word. Okay, I need to know that because I need to learn the word green. Because if not, I can't ask for green when at the end of the day. You know what I mean? There's this need. There's this immediate need. And I think it's true for adults. So let's say, oh, I need to go to Spain next week. I need to learn at least the basic expressions, right? So there's this immediate thing. And I think there is a language, I don't know, expert or teacher or a linguist or something who said that, the immediate factor is something that is, you know, it's a component in learning this whole.
Yeah, it makes sense. But it's, I was just thinking that it can be a little tricky in the example of adults because, like you said, obviously, I totally agree that context is everything. Like it's just going to help you understand way more than you would if you were to just learn isolated words, back to the colors examples that you mentioned, as opposed to yellow, green, black. Using real-life examples in context is going to help them understand what you're saying, first of all, and later on actually remember those words.
Yeah.
But the tree with the example and adults that you said, sometimes is so, okay, one person from Paris, they're going to Spain next week, like you said, and they want to learn the basic expression, which is perfectly fine. The only issue sometimes is with kids, it's a controlled environment, right? So what they need immediately, like you said, like they're going to say that, like, I want to be a line leader, like you said.
Yeah.
And that's good. But the problem with adults in real life is they're going to Spain, they're learning basic words, but whenever they get to Spain and actually use those words, okay, that's fine. But then the other person is going to reply.
That's the thing. There's nothing. But that's the whole idea as well with comprehensible input. The content that you're using is from videos, right? It's not natural. Right? It's not natural unless you're looking at vlogs or videos like this where people speak slowly, then that's fine. But the problem with comprehensible input, depending on the content, right? Well, it's not natural. So, okay. And there are many ways of answering. They may not answer the way you learned the expression, like, for example, how are you, como esta, and then que tal, but then, oh, que tal, what is that, what the heck, you know, I never learned that, I haven't learned that yet.
Right.
So that's the thing, there are many different ways to express something, and it, we lose confidence when it's not exactly the way we learn something, and that's why we sometimes memorize, right? So because I'm confident that tubig ito means this is water. That's how I learned it, and that's how I'm going to use it. There's nothing wrong with that because it adds confidence. You can say things the way you learn it, and you know that it will be right. You've confirmed it with someone, and that's fine. If you're able to retain that information, that expression, then that's great. I think there's something about that, like memorization and repetition. So that's the thing. That's the problem. That's the problem with going to Spain and using the word, because you might just be out of confidence. Okay, I'm confident that this is right, but then the other person responds differently. So that's the problem, right?
Right. No, yeah, exactly. But what I mean is that, like, you know, if you're going to Spain and you want to learn basic expressions because you want to be nice to people, so I'm perfectly fine with that. Sam, the problem is, let's say you want to learn how to order in a restaurant, just humble, right? So you learn a few expressions that you're going to use, but then the waiter comes back with another question, and then you go, right? it's like memorizing in that way is just like a short-term thing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, okay, it may help you for a week in specific situations. And like I said, if you want to be nice to people and show them that you want to use Spanish as much as possible, I'm perfectly fine with that. But when it comes to actually learning the language, I don't know if that's going to help in the long term.
Yeah. Well, we just have to be realistic too. We cannot expect, you know, you need to expect that you will not be able to answer. But for me, this is the beauty with having a tutor, for example. And that's why, because you can go back to your tutor and ask, oh, I heard this word. She used it this way. Can you explain why? Because, and the thing is, that's fine. You know, we want to understand things. So maybe the teacher would explain the grammar behind it and all that. And, you know, it adds to the confidence. So even if, let's say, okay, it's grammar based, I think there's something about it, because again, when we say I want to eat, we know that to eat, you know, that's an infinitive, and you know that it will always be that way, right? So those are sentence frames that we want to just master, and because it's plug and play, you just add whatever you need to add there. So but then let's just say, oh, I heard something different. Why was that? Then you can go to your teacher and ask. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know where I'm going with this, but what I'm saying is that, just the expectation. We also have to be realistic. That but it'll get me to practice, you know, what I learned, and we can always ask questions, right? So, for example, oh, I forgot. I know I learned the word to sit. Okay, and then you go, I forgot. And then you ask the waiter, how do you say to sit? Ah, upo. It's upo. It's in that's Tagalog, right? And then, and you'll be surprised, actually, that upo, as soon as you hear it from someone live, you know, it might actually get retained. You know, it'd be more...
memorable?
Yeah,
actually, yeah.
Something like that. Okay, gusto kong umupo. So there's this, upo is the root word, but then it's an you know, and then we work with affixes in Tagalog. So gusto kong umupo. So upo, the word upo is there, but let's just say you only learn that's the problem. Sometimes in Tagalog, you only learn the verb and you only learn the root word, not the full conjugated word, or
that's gonna come with context and the language as well.
But then again, it serves as, okay, varied review, okay, now I'm hearing it from a different source, you know. And it, there's nothing wrong with asking too. It's part of I think we should just consider that as part of learning as well. When we're going to a restaurant, okay, sure, I won't understand anything, but I'll hear words and then I'll hear expression, and I'll just maybe ask my tutor next time about it.
Yeah, true. Yeah, like that, about the realistic expectation.
And that happens a lot. I don't know about you, but your students, they'll come to you, oh, yeah, I heard this. Okay, teacher. Yeah, do they do that with you? I'm sure.
Yeah, of course. But there's one little nuance about that. When you said, I want to eat, or sometimes I have the feeling that if they ask me something or whatever the situation, if I tell them consciously, like not meaning based like we talked about, but just, I want to eat, so why do you use the whatever the question? If I tell them consciously, again, like focusing on form, they're going to understand right away. They're going to calm down right away. So they're going to be like, okay, perfect. But that doesn't mean they're going to be able to use it later. Like that's one of the things that I think what they need in order to be able to use I want to eat this example, right? It's not for you to tell them, like, you use this in this situation, but for you to actually use it as many times as possible in the context of, you know, a story, a conversation, or a class situation like you were talking about. Because I have the feeling like sometimes explaining things consciously, like grammar, things like that, in a way is the easy way out because, you know, they calm down because, oh, now I understand. But I think that there's a gap between actually understanding a role or something and then being able to use it. Because, again, another one of my fears is I, as a language student or master student, whoever that is, you may understand a specific structure or whatever that is, but that doesn't mean you're going to be able to use it in real time, in a real time conversation, because many times you need time to access those roles. Right. But in the real, if you're writing an essay that you have time to think about it, that's fine. But in the real life, real time conversation, it's not going to come out naturally at the beginning, right? So it's, I don't know where I'm going again, but if you want to be able to actually use a specific structure or just communicate in a natural way without having to constantly think about it, is telling them consciously going to actually help them? Or the thing that's actually helping them is you using it as much as possible within the context of, again, conversations. You know what I mean? Like, so you use, I want to eat because it's an imperative. No, it's just you as the teacher, or if you're a language student learning the language on your own, you're going to hear it in videos, resources, books, and whatever it is. So is that, to me, is that part in which you're actually hearing that structure, but you're not paying conscious attention to the specific structure. If that makes sense.
I think you can use it just as a complement as well. And then that way later on, they wouldn't have to ask that question. Oh, okay. Yeah. That question has been answered. Because sometimes it's just not satisfying. You know, there's just something, and the thing is, we learn things from school, and when we're at school, we wanna, we wanna understand things like, okay, what is a Pythagorean theory, you know, and 2 + b, what is that? Okay, am I just supposed to recite it that way? Okay, so you wanna imagine it. Okay, that's the right triangle that way. Okay, so etc. So you wanna add meaning to it again. Okay, so because if you just recite A squared, I don't know. I don't even, I'm just uttering whatever, right? I'm not a mathematician. So let's just say, okay, A squared plus B squared equals C squared. I don't even know if that's the right thing. But you want to imagine it. Okay, what does that mean, though? Is that the right, because, you know, it has to have a right triangle or something like that. So you want to have that vision. You want to have that understanding. And I think it's the same with language. Okay, so you have the sentence frame. Okay. Too big ito, but you want to have that mental representation as well. So that's why you need context, you need meaning. Just learning, it's not just some letters and words like A squared plus B squared. You know, what is that? And, you know, how am I gonna use that? Especially, you know, that's the
right thing. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's why I think when you're using like a natural conversation, where meaning is the focus point. Without them paying attention, they're going to build that mental representation that you're talking about. I mean, like, I know that conscious part can have its place. I'm not saying it's useless. No, I'm not saying that. But like my personal problem is, it whenever there's some sort of conscious learning, you know, I get back to my school days, right? And I know for whatever reason, I didn't enjoy that type of learning at all. Like now as an adult, I love learning new things. Like I'm doing it on a daily basis and I love it. But there's something about consciously learning things because you're going to be tested. that makes it not enjoyable at all for me.
Too much pressure.
Yeah, exactly. And so I keep getting, you know, I keep reminding myself of those that back that, you know, those like back in the day when you memorize or you consider learning things in order to pass the exam, but a week later, you didn't even remember what it was about.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I agree with you because some students are good at, you know, it should end with ED. You know, they're good at that. They're good in writing tests, right? But then you talk to them and they cannot utter, you know, an expression. That's not a good thing.
Exactly. Yeah, that's.
Sometimes we just become good at, you know, writing the test.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just, for me, this works for languages and any other subject.
Yeah.
But again, sometimes I might be, I was going to say, like, a bit more radical than I should, because I didn't enjoy that at all. Like, that pressure, because to me, that's not learning for the sake of learning. That's just learning for the sake of passing an exam or a test. Yeah. And that's it. You know, and a week later, I was going to say a month, but not a week later, you don't even know what it was about. And you don't remember anything about that specific subject. And to me, you know, if you're teaching the subject, I know as a teacher within the school system, you have tests. So I'm not, this is not about teachers, okay? But what I mean is, it's more about the education system as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much we're helping students if all they care about is passing tests. You know what I'm, so I think they're not going to remember what they learned if they learn that way, that first thing. But my biggest fear, you know, about that is they're going to equate learning with suffering, with that process. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot recently. That's why I think like a lot of adults, when they leave the education system, they graduate from high school or college or whatever that is, they don't even want to hear about learning something. You know what I mean? Like they've demonized it so much that they've associated the idea of learning with that when, you know, when they're 30, 35, 40, they just don't want to learn anything.
They develop an aversion to the conjugation tables, right? Yeah.
For example,
But
you know, this is not just about language, but and like education as a whole. And again, that's one of my fears as well, because I actually understand why adults don't want to learn anything else. Because but anyway, it's not related to the topic, but. A little rant here, but
But how do you do it in your class, for example? So okay, you have an hour, and what do you do? Because normally, I'll let you describe what you do in class.
So mostly we create stories, okay? And again, the good thing about stories to me, before we get into the actual teaching, is first of all, we communicate through stories all the time.
Yeah, okay, good.
And within stories, you can actually include anything you want. Like, you can describe things, but you can include dialogues between characters, right? So you can include any type of life situation. And if for whatever reason your students are more interested in a specific type of language or, you know, going to the restaurant, like you said, you can actually have a character in the story go to the restaurant and talk with the waiter.
Mm-hmm.
But this way, we're creating a story. Mm-hmm. And again, they're going to learn the expression, they're going to acquire the language without being aware of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, back to the example that you talked about the blue jacket. Right, so we're creating a story. Okay, so the main character is, and it can get silly, even, you know, whatever you mean. Like, it's an elephant with a blue jacket, for example, right? And after the class, I would actually go to an AI tool and take an and get a picture of an elephant on the blue jacket. So it's even more memorable, right?
Okay.
But okay, so, and his name is John, and you know, he's got a girlfriend, and his girlfriend is a crocodile. I'm making it up on the fly.
Yeah.
What I mean is, by creating stories, there's so much context in it, right? And also, you learn about your students, like what they like. So I try to tailor the stories for what they like, right? So if they're interested in politics, for example, I don't think your kids are interested in politics, but just an example. If they're interested in politics, so maybe one of the characters is a politician, right? And he or she needs to negotiate with another country because there's an issue over oil, whatever, right? But like, you also adjust to what they like, right?
Yeah.
And then the expert, like, I actually like to go freely when it comes to the expressions I'm using, because I know that if I communicate naturally in Spanish, the most common expressions are going to come out naturally, right? So I don't even target specific structures, but that's just me, right? I'm okay with, what I mean is, if I want to target specific structures, instead of just giving them to my students, I'm just going to use them myself a lot during the story, right? But I personally don't target specific structures because I know that naturally, as I adjust the way I communicate so it's comprehensible for them, I'm going to use the most common verbs, the most common expressions naturally, right? I'm going to talk about eating, about wanting, about going more often than I'm going to talk about hoping or, wondering. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, but again, I'm okay with, so you want to use specific structures or target them, that's fine. But my biggest point is not to give them the expressions or talk about form, but use them yourself in the context of a story, for example. But sometimes we just play games. For example, we just play board games. Board games are actually interesting because you play on a turn basis, so you have time to explain things. So we just play in a game, like, you know, I explain the rules in Spanish. It's really visual because you have the actual board that you can look at. Explain. So you have four or five different options. You can go here and gain resources, for example. You can go over there and perform this action. You know, just the main idea, like, I use stories most of the time, but the main idea is to use real life communication, in which meaning is the most important thing.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Because I like the stories. And also, what I like is teaching science to kids because they love it. For example, they may not know relative pronouns, but they know that, okay, dolphins are mammals. Dolphins are mammals, you know? And actually, yeah, same thing. Oh, how do they breathe? They have blowholes. And sometimes I will give them pictures, circles of blowholes, you know, and things like that. And circle, you know, a language that they will just learn naturally. And so we will look at, and that's the thing. Okay, I want you to classify the animals. Okay, in this box, you put the birds. In this box, you put the mammals. And in other words, they're learning English without learning English. You're just learning concepts. Yeah. This is how you'll know that they have actually learned English, because, oh yeah, okay, so birds, they go here. I understood the instruction. So teacher said, put the birds here. So I will put this bird here. Okay. So now that will tell me that they've understood. And if I say, okay, blowhole, they circle the blowhole, and they will do the circling, and especially with the gesture. Okay, circle, and you know, so they know, they understand it that way. And then following the instruction, that tells me that they've understood the expression without even, you know, sometimes because it's a feedback to me, right? So even though they're not saying the word circle, I know they've done it. It's an indication that they've understood the word. And I say that's the output from them doesn't necessarily have to always be words.
Expression.
Yeah.
I love that.
So they will just learning about, for example, dolphins. Let's say I'm going to talk about dolphins today. Even if, let's say, the word blowhole is not something that they'll use in the immediate environment. Oh, they've learned it, just like the line leader. You know, they know the word line leader. It will register. Oh, blowhole. Yeah, I know what that is. Next time I go to a zoo and there's a dolphin, I can talk about dolphins. So anyway, parents would know it anyway, that this is our topic for this week. And they'll review it with the kids. Maybe they'll watch videos and all that. So again, with the word blowhole, you can associate verbs like breathe, right? They breathe. They have to go and go on the surface so that they can breathe, right? Because they need to put their blowhole where,
yeah, but well, there's so much
contact with air, right? So they'll learn water, they'll learn air. Is there just so many things?
Yep. Now, well, I think you summed it all up perfectly with, you said they're learning English without learning English. That to me is the holy grail. That's perfectly summarized. And even when you're saying that, okay, so dolphins have a blue hole, right?
Yeah.
Even if they're never going to use that word, imagine they're never going to use that word. But as you're talking about it, you're using expressions that they are going to use, that
dolphins
have. So but again, they're so interested in meaning, in the topic itself, that they kind of forget that they're listening to a foreign language.
Yeah.
That's the most important aspect for me.
Yeah.
And I love that. Yeah, like, awesome.
Yeah. And they have lungs, just like humans, we have lungs. You know, and then you can talk about humans without them realizing. And that's the thing. Well, it's easy actually for if you're a Francophone, because you know lots of words, human, you know, dauphin, you know, it's already there. So it's just almost like a different pronunciation for them, you know.
Yeah, I was just thinking that if you have some kids or students that like drawing, it would be interesting. Like the thing you were mentioning about their circling the blue house, and you can even create stories or talk about things that they have to draw. And if they like drawing, they're gonna have a good time. First of all, they're going to be here. They're listening to English, so they're gonna understand. I mean, they're gonna learn the language. And you're going to get the feedback that you were talking. Because if you're talking, okay, so dolphins have blue holes, and the students actually draw the blue hole. Okay, they understand what I'm saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Back to your point, that's really interesting as well, that the feedback doesn't need to be words all the time.
Yeah. And easy instructions, like how, you know, for them to understand, oh, okay, this is a blowhole. Circle the blowhole, you know. Now there's it's really very easy, you know, for them. Okay. And it's comprehensible input, because like subject, verb, object, instruction, you know, imperative. They don't actually need to know those things, right? But where sometimes we just, you know, pound students with these kinds of things, imperative, okay, instruction. But really, sometimes we actually don't need that, right?
There you go. That's what I think. So I think kids don't care about it.
They don't.
And adults, we do, but I think we temporarily come down because, okay, so now I know. But that doesn't mean that's actually going to allow you to use it later, you know? Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. So to wrap things up here, any final message for language students or for language teachers, anything that you think could be useful?
I think we can, I use the three principles, comprehensible input, we've talked a lot about that, and also spaced repetition. Sometimes we just really have to go back to the notion or the vocabulary, because we will forget, and memory is an important factor. So you have the content, which is the incomprehensible input. You need memory, and to work with your memory, you need spaced repetition, and your confidence. You need to work on your confidence. And for me, that's when you have the varied review. It confirms, okay, oh yeah, I heard it that way. Oh, you can say it differently. Okay, then that's great. You know, it adds to the confidence when you have different, you know, ways of expressing something. Because again, like you said, you learn it a certain way and you go to the restaurant and oh, they're saying things differently. But if you look at that varied review, let's just say, how do you cook a spaghetti? You know, a chef might do it differently, and then a home cook might do it differently. But seeing both, you know, it adds to that the variability of, you know, ways of expressing something, right? Yeah. So I think that adds to the confidence, and we need to be confident when we're speaking, right? So yeah, those three principles I always, you know, okay, check, check, check. And also there's what I call teacher talking time. So for example, if it's one-on-one, it's easy because you want to make sure, okay, if you have 1 hour at the beginning, you want to make sure half is dedicated to just like, you know, you talking, because they need to hear you. And then the other half, you want them to practice, right? You want to hear them speak. Because the comprehensible input, you can do that outside, right, of your class. So your class, you can use it for also practice. And as the student becomes more advanced, the teacher talking time should be reduced. So if I, for advanced students, I would say 70% for the student and only 30% for me. I'm just confirming what they're saying. So we have to be aware of the talking time, I would say. So that's when you're in class, that's with a teacher. And also, there's also this notion called language parent. You know, and what's interesting is that I have students whom I've been talking to or, you know, teaching for 3 years, for example, you know, and they see me as their parent because, you know, I'm the native speaker of Tagalog, and they all come to me and then they'll ask questions. We can talk about anything. I'm like their parent when it comes to language. And, you know, you want to find someone whom you can trust, right? And, you know, just be, you know, not worried about making mistakes and, you know, just your language brand. Because when we learned our language, our mother tongue, how did we learn? We had our parents, right? Or adult, right? So in a sense, if you're learning a language, you need someone to be there, someone live, not just not just you know, books and all that. I don't know. I think there's something right in that, because you want someone live. I don't know, just for me. But I know sometimes when it comes to hiring a tutor, you know, you have to pay and all that. Sometimes you don't have to pay. It could just be a language exchange. You know, there are ways, but find that person. Find that person, your language parent. Yep. There you go.
It would be fun. Yeah, and it's more of a control environment as opposed to you going out there to the wild. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
And the real life, like back to your example of going to Spain, people in real life, not everyone's going to adjust to your needs.
That's right.
Right. So having, the tutor or the language exchange partner, whatever that, you know, an environment in which you feel safer, especially at the beginning when you're first starting to communicate and you're going to make more mistakes. It's fine, obviously, but in real life scenarios, sometimes it can get more stressful when people don't have that much patience. They're just strangers on the street, so they don't want to spend the necessary time to adjust the way they communicate so it's more comprehensible, or to listen to you patiently, you know, things like that.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
So,
thank you so much.
This was a great discussion.
I love it. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. So thank you for inviting me.
Thanks so much for watching this interview. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it was helpful for you. And if you want to know more about language learning, language acquisition, like, you know, what's the best way to learn a language, ideas for language learning, the best resources at different levels, here you can find the whole playlist with all the interviews I've done so far with different researchers, teachers, polyglots, and so on. And finally, right here, you smash this guy right in the face to subscribe to my channel. I really appreciate it, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye-bye.